at least have one strap. We'll take two if we can. And a blanket, if I didn't already say that, and a bolster. I'm not sure if we run out, yeah, it looks like we have enough bolsters, but we can also use a rolled up blanket if we need to. And at some point we're going to use chairs, but I'm not going to bring them all in yet, because they're clanky.
Okay, I'm gonna start this. Oh, it's recording. You started it.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
This is part of a teacher training. So for those who aren't teacher training students, you might not know that. We have some yoga teacher training students here today. So I've been asked to record this session. So that's what's happening here. That's for the benefit of the teacher training students. So we'll begin. For those I haven't met yet, my name is Abby Hatfield, and I'm really glad to be here to teach this workshop, to teach this subject. And I'll tell you a little bit more about my journey with scoliosis as we go on. I'll kind of scatter it throughout what we do today. But I'd like to hear a little bit from you. There are a lot of us here, so we won't each individually speak at this point, but I'd like to know how many are teacher training students, and who are we? Okay, great. And then, of the rest of us who aren't in the teacher training program, how many of you are here because you have scoliosis? Everybody else, okay. And of the teacher training students, do any of you know that you have scoliosis too? Yeah, just one, okay, great. Has anyone had surgery for the scoliosis? Mm-hmm. When you were younger? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good to know. And then I know some of you have some movement limitations. You told me you'd rather not get up and down from the floor, so we'll accommodate that for sure. anybody at any time who needs a chair to sit on or something to help you feel comfortable, please feel free. You can move around the room, you can stand up, you can sit down, you can get a chair, you can move around. Don't feel like you have to stay put on your mat the entire time. Because as you know, if you have scoliosis, sometimes sitting still for a long time is something that causes more discomfort. So please take care of yourself in that way. We all will use chairs at some point, but for now, however you're comfortable is great. You're also free to lay down. Like, really, you can be comfortable. Okay. So, if you read my little bio on the flyer, you know that I was diagnosed with scoliosis when I was, I think 11 or 12. And I started practicing yoga when I was in college. 18, 19, following a car accident that I was in. And I had some pain from the car accident. I knew that I had scoliosis, and yoga really helped with my pain and my discomfort, and I just stayed on that path with yoga all this time. And it's taken me a long time. So you might not guess my age, but I'm not gonna tell it to you, but I've been practicing yoga for a while, about 20 years. And I'd say it took a good 15 of those years to figure out how to work with my scoliosis. You know, as a young 20-something, I loved doing big back bends and inversions and all kinds of crazy things, and they're not crazy, sorry. And I still enjoy doing those from time to time, but it took me a long time to understand what I can do and what I should do and what actually adds to my discomfort and what's helpful, what's really helpful, and what might be better left to my fellow yogis who might not have as much of a lateral curve to their spine. So I hope to share with you today information, just sharing in community also with other practitioners who have this this condition, and exercises, and we'll leave time at the end for questions. So we will take a break midway through. About 10, 15 minute break, whatever people need. Housekeeping wise, if you haven't been to this studio before, we have a bathroom, as you probably saw, in that front area there. And we also have one right out through this door. And you're free to come and go as you need to. Okay, any questions before we get started on the content? Okay. So, let's start. Embracing the Curve, that's the name of this workshop. And that just came to me. Other people, I didn't like trademark that. Other people use that phrase with scoliosis, embracing the curve. And as I was preparing for this, I was really thinking about that. Why embrace? What does that mean? You know, we think of the brace as something that helps us stabilize and helps us hold to center. But for someone to ask me to embrace my scoliosis, that means a lot. That means embracing something that's challenging to me, embracing something that's difficult, embracing something that causes me physical discomfort and pain. So I'm going to talk a bit about that. It's not all doom and gloom, but I do want to take some time at the beginning to acknowledge that there is emotion and there is there are thought patterns that we have whenever we have anything, scoliosis or any other condition that brings us physical or emotional discomfort, right? We have layers of our being, and that's why this is yoga, not exercise for scoliosis, right? That's why this workshop is yoga, not just exercise. We could skip the whole first section and just do exercises, but in my experience, I get more out of the practice if I really focus on all the layers. So, you have some of this on your handout. Why is it important to embrace? Well, first, the definition of embracing, to accept or to support willingly, to welcome with open arms, to take to one's heart. So why is it important to embrace this aspect of ourselves that causes us discomfort? Because when we don't embrace it, when we reject that part of ourselves, we have tension, right? Does that make sense so far? You're with me? Mm-hmm. Tension, sometimes shame, isolation, blame. How about fear? Fear is one that I hear a lot from people who have scoliosis, like, I'm afraid this is going to keep getting worse. I'm afraid of what this is going to do to me in the future. I'm afraid of the pain, you know. So these are real aspects of having scoliosis. And yet when we embrace these aspects of self, these parts of ourselves that are there, maybe under the surface, then we have opportunity to learn, to grow. When we embrace things that are challenging, when we go forward toward them, we have more capacity, we have compassion. So I think this is really important. Now, many scholars and mystics say that in order to experience joy, we also need to acknowledge suffering. In order to experience the state of being free or pain-free, right? Sometimes we need to know what pain is like to experience a state of being free of pain. There even was an article that I came across when I was preparing this in Psychology Today, just about this, that we need to embrace the suffering in order to experience the joy. And this is a really fundamental teaching in yoga. Welcome. Hi. So, three aspects of the yoga practice that I'd like to explore in regards to this work. Come on in and welcome. Thank you for helping set him up. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So three aspects of the yoga practice that I'd like to bring in today, and the first is the kosha. So I'm already talking about this. If you've been in a teacher training or if you've been studying yoga for a while, you might have heard of this term, the koshas. So in yoga, the koshas comes from the Upanishads, really thousands of years old text. And these are the layers of our being. We have the physical layer, the muscles and bones. This is the anamaya kosha, also considered the food body, the body we feed, also the body that becomes food. The pranamaya kosha, this is the layer of being that is breath, energy. We think of prana as energy moving through the nadis or energy channels in the body. The manamaya kosha, this is mind and thought. And the vijnanamaya kosha, this is like deep wisdom. And then the anandamaya kosha, the sense of belonging, our wholeness, some call that the bliss body. Okay, so what I love about this, the koshas, is that all of these words have the word maya, right? The anamaya, the manamaya, the vijnanamaya. The word maya is illusion. The illusion is that these are separate pieces, separate things, like an onion has its layers, right? They all are part of our moment-to-moment experience. So with that, yoga for scoliosis, we're not just going to look at the anamaya or the physical body because we know it's intertwined with all these other aspects of our being. The second aspect of yoga that I'd like to bring in today is skillful action. And this is a definition of yoga from the Bhagavad Gita. So when we're working with the exercise component of scoliosis, what is skillful? Like I said, doing those deep back bends in my 20s may not have been the most skillful action. I still do them, but I do them slowly over time. I build up to them maybe for months before I actually do a full wheel or scorpion or something at this point. So we're going to look at what is skillful. Hopefully, my hope is that we'll figure out what is skillful for each and every one of us. We'll see how we do with that. Also with skillful action, you know, there are other aspects of yoga besides the physical postures that are really helpful for scoliosis, in my experience, and I think those who've practiced these would agree. The meditation, the relaxation is so key. So For me, skillful action, if I'm going to approach my yoga practice, if I'm stressed, if I'm tired, and then I'm going to go do some exercises, I'm not going to get nearly as much out of them as I would if I maybe did some restorative yoga first or instead. If I manage my sleep and my nutrition better first and then go into the exercises, because if I'm moving into the exercises and I already am feeling tension, then I'm not going to have the opportunity to balance that out as well. So that's also skillful, right? to really question and look at what might be the very best approach for me in this moment. Is it doing some twists to derotate my spine, or is it laying on my back and doing a guided meditation? Right? Where am I today, and what's really going to be the best tool for what I'm feeling? I also wrote, I think I wrote this on your handouts too, this comes from my first teacher, Sarah Joy Marsh, who I did teacher training with. She says, I think this is in her book, What Are You Hungry For? First do less harm, then do more good. So if I'm going to do exercises to help derotate my spine, again, maybe I want to address my stress first. Maybe I want to make sure that I've had the proper nutrition and sleep first. And finally, the third aspect of yoga is that yoga embraces pairs of opposites. We have from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, Sukha Sthira Asanam, we have stability and freedom, muscular energy and organic energy, effort and surrender, each in and out breath, joy and sorrow. All these pairs of opposites are part of the experience of yoga, and like the breath, the flow between these pairs of opposites and the awareness of that flow, it's lila, like it's that divine play of life. Like that's the juicy part of life that we get to experience, that divine play between those pairs of opposites. So we'll experience those, right? Stability, how do we stabilize? How do we strengthen? How do we experience freedom in the postures? Okay, so I am going to turn this slide projector on. I've never used a slide projector in the workshop before, so this was fun for me to figure out how to use it. We're not going to use it for very long, but I do want to show you some things on the slide. So it's going to be on this wall, so you want to turn yourself so that you can face that direction for a little while. which means that functional scoliosis doesn't actually necessarily have rotation. People who have functional scoliosis often just have the lateral, the side-to-side curve to the spine.
So if a person has rotation, would that be considered the structural thing?
Not necessarily. There could be other causes of the rotation. You know, it may not be structural. There may be other muscular reasons for that rotation. But structural always has the rotation. Functional can have the rotation and can sometimes not have the rotation. So 80% of structural scoliosis, that's the one that's usually found when you're a teenager or a young adult, 80% of those cases are idiopathic. So 80% of the structural scoliosis, we don't know what causes it. The other 20% of structural scoliosis can be degenerative, which comes on later in life. That can have to do with some spinal degeneration. Neuromuscular, things like muscular dystrophy or cerebral palsy can cause neuromuscular issues that create that curve of the spine, or congenital, and that's very rare. So functional scoliosis results from a temporary cause, and spinal rotation is not necessarily present. So the spine's structure is still normal. The curvature in the spine is caused by some other reason. We'll talk about causes next. So causes of functional scoliosis: muscle spasms or tightness, difference in leg length or perceived difference in leg length. Sometimes the legs themselves are the same length, but the way they sit in the hip socket or the way the pelvis receives the thigh bone might appear to be a difference in leg length. Postural habits, standing on one leg more than the other. Pelvic asymmetry, I just talked about. Inflammation, so the spine will curve away from inflammation. Appendicitis is an example of that. Common symptoms, which many of us know, include pain or numbness, changes in gait, reduced range of motion, and if the curvature is severe enough, breathing and cardiovascular problems can occur. Curves can be seen with a forward bend test. We'll do some of that together a little bit later. Curves of more than 10% are considered for the scoliosis diagnosis. 90% of curves do not need treatment. Curves over 20 degrees to 30 degrees will be considered for treatments, including the brace and possible surgery for curves over 40 or 50 degrees. I'm not going to get into how those degrees are measured. It's easy for you to find that information, but usually it's with a cob angle. So exercise can reduce further muscle tightening due to muscular compensations and can increase the range of motion for joint and muscle health. And mindfulness and meditation can significantly reduce pain associated with scoliosis. Research has shown that one yoga pose, the side plank, can significantly reduce thoracic curves. Has anyone heard of that study? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really cool that there's a study out there. Finally, I think it's the first scientific evidence-based study that shows that yoga and or exercise helps scoliosis. So that's great. However, it's a challenging pose that's proposed with the side plank. For those who practice yoga a lot, you know the side plank is not an easy pose. And it's really individual how that pose might be helpful for each individual person. So we will look at that pose later on. And at the end of your handout, there's some resources and Laura Fishman's article is cited there if you want to read it. Some people are having success using the Scroff method. You can check that out too. I don't know much about the Scroff method other than that it really involves what's called rotational angular breathing. We'll explore a little bit of that today. And I'm going to quote Doug Keller again here, because he says this so well. The goal is that through stretching and strengthening, we can create a posture in which the bones do a better job of supporting the body. Rather than falling into a downward spiral of tension in the muscles holding the body up, to see rotations in three dimensions. And rotations are three-dimensional, right? Hard to see it in two dimensions. But I will try to explain as we go on with class what that rotation is like. So I'll just stand up. The pointer's not going to go. So this thoracic curve, this is a little bit of an S-curve, right? We have a little bit of that lumbar curve here. So when we have this curve going to the right, the vertebrae are rotated to the left, which makes the ribs bulge on this side. Right? So if we just had that lateral curve, the ribs would be flat on the back of the body. But because we have a rotation, these ribs are more prominent on the back side of the body, or that shoulder is more prominent on the back side of the body. The same on the lumbar side, the rotation is the other way, which makes this side of the curve more prominent. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We wrap our heads around that. And the other slide shows that that's from the top, right? That's like looking down at somebody's rib cage and a vertebra. And that would be looking, it kind of could be flipped over, but that what you're seeing on this side, these are the prominent ribs on the back. So that rotation that way of the vertebra itself creates that bulge there, and then we have the concavity on the other side. Okay. So that's all the more information piece that I'm going to give you for now. This would be a good moment if you have questions about this specifically to ask. And then we're going to move forward with how do you find your curve. So, well, let's stop for questions first. Any questions, comments on this part?
When someone has scoliosis, are they more limited by their rib displacement or by the actual spinal cord?
Great question. Her question was, are people who have scoliosis more limited by the spinal, the rib cage movement, or the spinal curve? So, of course, it's going to depend on the degree of curvature and the type of curve and the person. My scoliosis, I have pretty mild upper right thoracic curve, and my twisting is the most challenging thing for me. So rotating to the right, my chiropractor would say also to the left, actually, now that I think about it. Rotations are the hardest for me because we're working with this rotation. Right? We have to, if I twist one direction, I'm actually working against the rotation of my vertebrae. So that can be really challenging. As far as yoga postures, this is a good juncture to say what is contraindicated for yoga would be deep back bends. And the reason for that is the places where kind of the apex of the curves, the places like right between the curves, if I have an S curve, then that would be like right in the middle. Those places in the spine are a little more vulnerable because this here is a little more rigid. This here is also a little more rigid, which makes the place in between them, for some people, hypermobile. So when if I have this curve and I'm going to go into a deep back bend, the part of my back that I'm going to take most of the curve is going to be the place that's the most mobile, which could be a vulnerable place. Does that make sense? So back bends, although they feel good, we want to approach them really carefully and mindfully and know what it is we're doing, right? When I do a back bend, I want to gently and kind of segmentally open my upper back, and I'm really clear that I don't want to take all the back bend in my lumbar or my mid-back, but I really want to let it arch through my whole spine.
You will be talking about immersion tables.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can see that inversion, but the inversion table just releases all that stress on my spine, particularly my lower curvature,
mm-hmm.
as I have the surgery for the top curve, but not for the bottom one. But the bottom one's getting worse over time in the inversion, so it feels glorious.
Yeah.
I can't do it back then, the inversion table is as close as I can get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you for that.
And for those who have a long-standing yoga practice and are able to do inversions, actually for me, the pose that I like the most for scoliosis is handstand, because I'm inverted, I'm changing my relationship to gravity, and I'm actually using the muscles along my spine to lengthen my whole spine. Feels so good. We're going to do some traction exercises and some other types of inversions today that most people can't access. So.
You were talking about the hypermobile area between the curves.
Mm-hmm.
It's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's just one curve, the thoracic or the lumbar, is there a point also? And do they need to be just as cautious?
They say generally if somebody just has a thoracic curve, that the lumbar is more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would go for the thoracolumbar too. If it's more mid-back, it's going to be the lumbar spine. That for most of us, the lumbar is more flexible and mobile than the upper back. So for people who have scoliosis, I think that's a little more pronounced. I can't say for the other way around, you know, if somebody just has a lumbar, is their upper back more mobile? I don't know the answer to that. But, yeah.
And then also, you'll probably get into this, but the portion of the functional and tight musculature
is
pulling, and the different leg length and the pelvis, how that influences.
Yeah. Let's see if I have it on the next slide. Yes.
Yay.
So the red, excuse me, this is where we tend to be tight when we have these curves. And so if you have upper thoracic, right thoracic scoliosis like I do, this is really familiar, that red part on the upper back is, those are the muscles that are tight. So those are considered to be, if you read there, A, it says unilateral rhomboid hypertonicity. That means the rhomboids are tight. And the phrase Doug Keller uses and some other anatomy people use is locked short. Those muscles are locked short. If you think of a muscle like a rubber band, that would be like, it's in its unstretched position. And the muscles on the other side, which aren't shown, but just the balance, you know, maybe right on the other side of the muscles we see there, those are locked long. Locked long is also tight. If you take a rubber band and you stretch it, it's tight. So when I have massage, the massage therapists often say, "You're really tight on the left." And I'm like, "Yeah, but the left doesn't bother me." It's because those muscles on the left side are locked long. They feel taut. And they're generally weak. So the muscles on the right are generally stronger. But I wouldn't even say stronger, because there's some weakness there too sometimes. But they're tighter. They're shorter. That's more correct. They're shorter. The muscles on the left side, on these curves, these muscles here are weaker generally. So strengthening the muscles on the opposing side of the curve is one way to help the curve. So think of wherever you see that concavity here, if I can strengthen some muscles in this direction, that can help. And then the muscles that are tighter and shorter, we do want to stretch those. And that's a little counterintuitive, because we think, like, I'll just keep using my body as an example because it's what I know the best. I would think that right side, because it's already bulging, I don't want to stretch it more. But actually, those muscles need to be stretched. Those muscles are short, and they need to be lengthened.
You said strengthen the muscles on the opposing side of the curve. So saying that, so basically on that short side, that rhomboid section right there, that's the side that you want to strengthen?
I want to stretch the rhomboids on the convex side.
Okay.
And I want to strengthen the rhomboids on the concave side.
Okay.
But I want to address that part too. I have that too, right? And the rotator cuff muscles, the muscles that are responsible for kind of keeping that rounding from happening, I am using those a lot to do the same thing, to hold that shoulder back. They're pretty well developed.
Yeah.
Right? And I do want to keep using them and I want to keep them strong. But at a certain point, they're tight, they're strong, and I do want to stretch them too, because they get used so much. And I know I use them subconsciously, not just when I'm in my yoga practice, but when I'm just standing. Like, I don't want my shoulder to be rounded forward. I want my shoulder to sit back. So I'm going to use those muscles a lot, because I'm going to prevent that from becoming worse, or even from it becoming obvious to somebody else, which is one of those places where mind and emotion play into this, right? So,
And the do less harm than do more good is like really discerning what's best for that moment. Like, maybe it just needs to hang.
Right. Sometimes maybe it just needs to hang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In looking at these, I don't see like the left C curve.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have illustrations of that as far as what muscles are tight and short and long?
I don't have illustrations of that. Let me go back a slide. But because that lumbar curve is or the thoracolumbar, the majority of those are to the right, I only have illustrations of them to the right. But if we can use our imagination a little bit, what you're saying, the left C curve.
The left lumbar. The one.
Yeah,
the lumbar
left. That one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, you're fine. Yeah, so on this one, these muscles here tend to be tighter. These muscles would tend to be weaker. And at a point here, it really goes deep into the abdominals. It's not just the back side of the body, because we know the spine isn't just on the back, it's three dimensional.
So, are the shoulders involved with that too, as far as?
Often, yes. I think people don't have as much discomfort in the shoulders when they just have that curve there. They'll probably experience more discomfort in the hips and the SI joint, the low back. But we will compensate, right? If I have that curvature and it's affecting the way I'm standing on my legs, then my shoulder, I'm going to have a lateral shift to the left or right.
Mm-hmm.
My shoulders are going to receive that down the chain, too. So
I'm not sure this is the right place to talk about this, but so how does this relate? I believe I have the right thoracic curve or the left. I don't know one certain now.
Okay.
But how does that relate maybe to, as I'm getting older, the neck going forward, the spine, the head moving forward?
Yeah. It does affect that. You know, well, on one side, yes, scoliosis does, the degree tends to increase as we age. But that's why we're here, right? Where we learn some exercises that prevent the curvature from increasing as much as we can. The forward head position really happens no matter what stage or age you are with scoliosis. So for most people who have scoliosis, that the upper back rounded is called kyphosis, and the forward head position often goes along with that. So like if you take a peek at Doug Keller's book at some point, he shows some pictures of just that happens, right? We have that rounding of the shoulders, which makes the forward head position. So it's good to be aware of how do I prevent that from continuing as a pattern. But today in class, we're not going to do too much head and neck work because our necks are tender and sensitive. So we're going to stick with more bigger muscles. There's so many smaller muscles there. But in that book, there are some recommended exercises for head posture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
extension isn't contraindicated, it's just extreme extension.
Uh-huh.
So extension is definitely recommended, and those are some of the exercises we'll do today. We want to strengthen the muscles bilaterally on both sides of the upper back. We want to keep that chain going really from the core, from the foundation, all the way up so that we have that nice, gentle curve of the spine. We just don't want to get into those big back bends that get the lumbar involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not that they're never to be done. Like, I do wheel, and I love wheel,
yes.
But I need to prep for wheel for, like, a month.
Right.
And make sure that my core is ready, and make sure that my upper back is flexible and strong enough.
Yeah, so it takes a lot of consistency and diligence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, otherwise I'll end up with a sore low back, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You ready to move forward? So the next thing we're going to do is getting to know your curve. So a lot of you already know what curve you have. When I did this workshop last year, I was surprised that about half of the people in the workshop didn't know what their curve was. Didn't know if it went right or left, or if it was thoracic or lumbar. So even though many of you might already know, we're going to take some time to work together and figure out what our curve is. And I have a little video, it's like 8 minutes long, 7 and some minutes long, by this yoga teacher. Her name's June Mary. That's her website. And she goes through a little checklist of how to find your curve. And so we're going to look at that. Then we're going to work together in groups of three to help each other understand the curves. And I think this is beneficial for all of us, but for the teacher training students to be able to spot and identify what a curve looks like in your students. That's really useful. So we'll do that next, just to give you a little outline of where we're going. So we'll do that finding your curve, then we'll take just a little bit of a break, and then we'll do the exercises are going to be in the last 2 hours of our workshop today. Okay? So we'll go to June and Barry. I hope that the little ad, the YouTube ad, doesn't play, but I apologize in advance if it does. So you might want to, good idea to. I'm going to add to what she's saying, also that kyphosis that we talked about. Are you
we really can't have a difficult time feeling that one side is different than the other at all in pose. So it's helpful to just get a sense of where things are. Before we get in groups, I just I could use someone to help me. Can I have you help me, Lisa, since you're up front?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to show you that forward bend test on me. So if you can get to where you can see me, we're going to get up and move in a minute anyway. Let me put my hair up.
So we can come up closer to see you, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if you want to just get in a position so that you can see the best. So what I'm going to have you do is just place the block. This way is probably easiest to see upper back, mid back, low back. I don't have much of a lumbar curve. I mostly only have an upper thoracic curve, so you won't see this. But if you put a block there, you can see if the block is tilted to one side or the other, you can see which side is higher than the other. So I'm going to stand sideways, and you can come around any way you need to see this. So I'm not going to care about my head position, and I'm going to just let my shoulders round here. So this is the first part of the forward bend, and I'm just going to let myself hang here. So you can probably see that my right side is higher, and if she puts that block right in the middle, I'm guessing that it's going to tilt a little bit to one side. And then I'm going to keep going down, and now she's going to put it more on my mid-back, low back, either way, you get the picture, right? Mid-back, you can probably see more of that C curve in somebody. If you put that block or you look right at the middle back, you'll see if one side, if it dips to one side. And then low back, I'm going to go a little deeper into my bend, and you would be able to see that the low back is lifted on one side if it is. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. Could you see that?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's do that together in groups of three. I don't know how many we are, but there might be an odd group. That's okay. If you can get to where the teacher training students are separated, so every group has a teacher training student, I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to have somebody video me so I can see it myself later.
Mm-hmm.
And I do just
yeah,
get my
you have your phone. Yeah, sure. Feels good to me.
I am a teacher trainer.
I have a very obvious teacher. Would like, that's it.
Again, as long as they don't
have see my competition.
And I always say that. Especially in group classes where I have women
and those that you want
to do that, if they know that they have a student process, it might not be the best for the test because
this is not something that you
you don't want to do that loaded.
Correct.
Or
I
feel
bad.
Are you timing us? So we're going to switch, if you haven't yet, to the second person.
Yeah.
ahas? No.
What was the contraindication you mentioned earlier with regards to people with osteoporosis don't
have this? Just this test. We want to be really careful when we do a, it's called a loaded forward bend, right? So if I'm going to put all of my weight forward into this rounded position, people who have osteoporosis, that could be harmful for them. Also, if it's severe osteoporosis, it would be harmful. If it's osteopenia or something mild, you can probably do this as a test without harm, but it's not something you want to do over and over again as a practice. If you have osteoporosis or if you have a bulging disc or herniated discs, because that just adds to the backward pressure of those discs.
Yeah. Are you talking specifically with flexion in the spine? Mm-hmm. Or are you including the hip flexion, just the, like you said, the yoga?
When we teach forward folds to people who have those conditions, like she said, if you're a yogi and you're used to doing a forward fold, we want to hinge at the hip. Uh-huh. And that's how we teach and practice forward bends generally in yoga. So when we invite people to do this rounding, that can feel so good. And for me, as someone who has scoliosis, that does feel really good to just stretch all those tight areas. But we don't want to do that loaded forward flexion with people who have those conditions.
But the straight back is okay.
Straight back is good. Yeah. Yep.
And I just wanted to mention that working with you and also with chiropractors, what I found over the years is that even though I have a certain, you know, the S curve, it's different. Like, don't, you know, some people might have neck pain, other people don't, or
right.
Some might have,
yeah.
Like, it's so unique. Like, each individual is so different.
Did everyone hear that? In the back? Yeah.
I couldn't hear all of them.
Yeah. Lisa said that some people have. I'm going to add to what you said, but some people have more of a curvature, some people have an S curve, some people just have a lumbar curve, but where you feel the discomfort or where you feel it is really completely unique to each person. So somebody might have neck pain and they just have a lumbar curve, and those two things might seem somewhat unrelated, but they're not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So where you feel what you feel is totally different person to person.
Could that be partly related to some of the subconscious things, what pulling the shoulder back? If you don't do that, then maybe you wouldn't experience the same pain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm smiling because I mean, that was a huge revelation for me, that I'm actually creating more pain in my body because subconsciously I don't want to have this curve, so I keep pulling this shoulder back and pulling this shoulder back, and over the years that is causing pain. Right? So that's a really good point. And I also would add, you know, I just came back from 3 days at a conference in Bend called the Oregon Conference on Opiates, Pain, and Addiction Treatment, because I'm a yoga therapist who works with chronic pain. And what the physicians say over and over again is that we can look at two MRIs, and I'll say the same for scoliosis, we can look at two spines that are exactly the same on a picture, but one person has pain and the other person doesn't. And what that tells us is that how much pain we have is not just a byproduct of the structure of the spine, right? How much pain we have encompasses many more things besides just the muscle tension. In order to have pain, there also has to be a component of suffering, of mental and emotional experience. Because physically, like I said, two spines that look exactly the same, those two people can have a completely different experience of what they feel, even if the muscles are doing the same things. So that's my other thing I'll add to that, you know, what we have in the subconscious around the shape of the spine adds so much to the experience that we have of what.
Well, and obviously too, if it's congenital, then you grow acclimated to it. So it's not pain per se that like somebody who has the functional sense of it, like if you're in a car wreck or something, or
you know, and it's causing some curvature for a while, you grow acclimated to your body. And so what somebody else might perceive as intense pain is just your normal everyday body
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And yet, like Doug Keller said, you know, we do this muscle compensation,
mm-hmm.
right? So when we do have that curvature, it's both,
mm-hmm.
right? It's both that when we have the curvature, the muscles are going to compensate and there will be tension. And we can acclimate to that tension,
mm-hmm.
yes. And but yet, we don't want to, if we continue going down that road of tension, then
right.
other compensations
mm-hmm.
will spring up, right?
Right.
So we want to do what we can to decrease the muscle tension. Okay, so what I want to do from here is some meditation. So we're going to take the next 20 minutes or so, kind of letting all of that go, all of that we just covered and all that we just learned and all we just talked about, and do a guided meditation, do a little body scan, kind of like yoga nidra. If you've done yoga nidra, it'll be familiar. Then we'll take a break from there, and then we'll do our exercise component after that. So for this meditation, I'd like you to get as comfortable as you possibly can.
Can you put the air conditioner down?
Yes, thank you.
Maybe up for later for a different circuit.
Yeah, I'll turn it off for now, down for now. So if you'd like a chair, that's totally fine to sit on a chair. If you are using a chair, I would recommend something to lean up against. If I were doing this, I would lie on the floor, maybe a bolster under the knees, a blanket under the head. Maybe even a blanket on top of you. We'll be here for about 20 minutes, so comfort is key. Something you can play with right now, actually, while you're laying down, if you've just determined that curve, right, or maybe you know your curve, some people are more comfortable placing a little lift under the concave side. If you haven't tried that before, you might try that, taking, you have these little, you have these little yoga mat strips. If anyone wants to try one, if you take it under the concave side, it can be really nice.
Okay.
So it'll be a little hard for you to position it with your chair, but I can.
Okay.
You can always take it out if it feels awkward or if you don't like it.
So it would just like go under here?
It would go under the side that doesn't have the bulge, right? So it goes
the way it goes.
Yeah, so it would go right here.
Where just like a fold up.
Just as a little fold, yep. And not for you, maybe not quite that much, but maybe just have a little bit of that.
Okay.
Anyone else? So you'll find your comfortable seat or lying down posture. Just notice what's present. Looking at all of these layers. You know, the physical body, the muscles and bones, the energy, right? The energy level. You're energized or tired. You're feeling relaxed. Hopefully not anxious, but all of those feelings related to the nervous system. Even your organs, your digestion. Your immune system. Exploring the layer of thought in the mind. Just noticing if the mind is very active and thoughtful, busy, or if it's more calm. The emotions, even though not probably on the forefront, just taking a moment to acknowledge or notice. Acknowledging and noticing all of these layers and how they all exist as part of this present moment experience. And then we'll turn attention directly to the physical body, doing a little scan through the body, inviting each part of the body to relax, to rest. Starting with the head. So feeling the way the tongue rests behind the teeth, the jaw soft, the teeth separated. And feeling the jaw, the sinuses, the ear canals, the skin of the face, layer of muscle around the skull, feeling the back of the head resting, moving now down the right side of the neck, the right shoulder, feeling into the inside of the right shoulder, fully letting the right arm be heavy as we let the right shoulder relax. Moving attention down from the center of the right shoulder, down the core of the right arm, all the way down to the right palm. Feeling like a little pool inside the right palm. And then moving back up across the chest, all the way to the left shoulder. In the same way, letting the left shoulder relax as the left arm is very heavy. Feeling your way along the inside of the right arm, or the left arm rather, all the way to the left palm. Thank you.
upper back.
Feeling the inside of the upper back. Moving down to the low back. And then attention rising up through the top of the abdomen as you feel the breath softly create a rise and fall in the abdomen. And attention then moves to the right hip. Feeling the right hip crease. Feeling the heaviness of the right leg. And then moving along the inside of the right leg all the way down past the knee, all the way down to the right toes. And feeling for a moment that threshold of sensation between the right toes and the air or the blanket or the mat. Present in the right toes. And then moving back up the right leg, all the way up to the right hip and across the pelvis, moving to the left hip. Feeling your way to the inside of the left hip. Making your way all the way down the left leg. All the way down to the left foot, the left toes. Again, feeling that threshold of sensation between the left toes and whatever it is they're in contact with. Just honing your skill of attention. Attention to sensation. Moving back up the left leg, now all the way up to the abdomen, all the way up to the belly. Again, just feeling that rise and fall of breath. And just watching the breath now for a few moments, calm, no effort. Just observing its natural ebb and flow. We'll shift attention now to an image or maybe even a thought. Coming back to our theme for our class today, I invite you to consider something that you embrace. Something that you open your arms to willingly. You might even say something you love. Something that touches your heart. It could be a person, it could be a place, it could be a thing. Whatever it is, it could be a memory. I invite you to hold that memory or that image or that thought. Stay with it for a few moments here. That feeling of embrace. That thing which we embrace and the feeling that goes along with it. So as you think or consider or conjure that which you embrace, now come back to the body. Notice as you hold that which you hold dear, as you feel into it, where do you feel it in the body? How does the body feel? How does it respond? Some people say it can feel like a little smile right at the heart. So just notice as you consider that which you embrace, that which you love or you welcome, how that's reflected in your physical feeling in the body. Maybe there's a temperature associated. Maybe there's warmth. Maybe there's sensation. So another word for embracing is aloha. To welcome with open arms. Aloha also means the breath we share. So as you open your arms, as you welcome this feeling of embracing, notice the breath. Notice the dynamic play between that sensation in the body associated with embracing or aloha and the breath itself. Feeling the breath now in the entire torso. Feeling the breath in the back, in the belly, in the rib cage, in the chest. And feeling the way that the breath is in a dynamic relationship with the spine. Perhaps also embracing the spine in this aloha, this feeling of the breath that we share, that every part of you shares. Just shift attention one more time to that broader picture that includes all the body, arms and legs, face, head. Feeling yourself again as you connect with the floor or chair. Connecting with where you are in space. Allow yourself to stretch out a little bit through fingers and toes, arms and legs, any little movements. And you'll, in your own way, make your way back to an upright position, taking however long you need. If you did fall asleep, that's totally normal. It happens a lot when we do meditation. just making your way back up. So I will say for me, yoga nidra, which that was an abbreviated yoga nidra session, that wasn't a full session, I would usually do a little longer than that, has helped my pain associated with scoliosis more than anything else that I've done. So we will do the exercises in the second half, but I wanted to make sure to give you a taste of what that deep relaxation and that sense of embracing and really tuning in with the breath, what that can do for our experience of pain, because often scoliosis has some pain associated with it. Lots of recordings you can find online of yoga nidra. And at the end of class, we'll save a little time for questions and for like references. Someone asked if I knew a PT, or I'll give you some resources for yoga nidra and things like that. Okay. So we're going to take a little break. Let's do 10 minutes. So we're back just a couple minutes before 3. And then we'll get into our exercise portion of class, our postures.